I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. When America needed help after 9/11, it turned to Pakistan, and for the past 4 years, military and political leaders in Washington and Islamabad have been working together. It is, however, an uncomfortable alliance for the U.S. That's because at the same time as President Bush is promoting freedom and democracy for the whole region, his counterpart in the Pakistan presidential office is the military dictator Pervez Musharraf, a man who put himself into office 6 years ago, tossing aside a democratically elected prime minister. There is now pressure on Musharraf from in and outside Pakistan to allow free elections. One of those advocates is the former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto. She is here with me in the studio. And this hour, we'll talk about Pakistan and its missed opportunities. This is not a country that's had a lot of success with democracy. Every time someone's elected, they're accused of being corrupt and then thrown out of office. So here's our question for you today. Why is it so hard for genuine democracy to take root in Pakistan? Why is it that not one prime minister's been able to effectively restrain the power of the military or even the clerics? Is it really a problem of a corrupt society? And beyond that, what's the U.S. to do? To continue to work with partners of convenience? Or to call for the same standards of decent governance in all countries? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest, as I said, is the former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto. She was once a student here at Harvard before beginning her own political career. Her father was elected Prime Minister, but he was pushed from office and later hanged by military leaders. Bhutto herself was imprisoned for 5 years, but has since led the Pakistan People's Party twice to victory. Now, in both cases, she was removed from office accused of corruption. She now lives in Dubai. Her husband, Asif Ali Zardari, lives in Pakistan. They are now between them marshalling the party, demanding that free and fair elections be held in Pakistan. It's good to have you in the studio. Welcome to The Connection.
Thank you. It's good to be in Boston and good to be on the show.
We call you always a former Prime Minister of Pakistan. Have you decided for sure that you would like to go back and once again be Prime Minister of that country?
Yes, I would like to go back and once again be Prime Minister of Pakistan if I receive a mandate from the people of the country. But the story of democracy is more important than my desires or my dreams. It's about the dreams of the 150 million people of Pakistan. I believe that democracy is important to the empowerment of the people of Pakistan, as well as to building a moderate nation state.
Now, there'd have to be a change in the law, I understand, because you can only be elected prime minister twice. Is that right?
That's right. There would have to be a change in the law for me to be elected as prime minister of Pakistan again. But this is a law that was passed by the military when it seized power. Former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif and I are both agreed that the changes brought by the military need to be reviewed by parliament, including the law that prohibits a twice elected prime minister from running for a third time.
And how would you go about this? For example, now you have this military dictator in charge of the country. You're living in exile outside the country. Where do you begin the conversation? Do you have to negotiate with Pervez Musharraf?
Yes, we do also have to negotiate with General Pervez Musharraf. The reason we have to negotiate with him is because he gives a lot of confidence to the international community. The international community backs him, so we need the support of the international community too. Pakistan's a very important country. It neighbors Afghanistan, and of course the Taliban are trying to regroup there. So in moving towards democracy in Pakistan, we want to make sure that the people of Pakistan are on board and the international community is on board. So talking to General Musharraf is also important.
Won't there be people, though, who say, Ms. Bhutto, you should not be doing deals with this man? This is a man who has already demonstrated he has no interest in democracy and no real interest in free and fair elections. So there's a danger that you're going to taint yourself by cutting a deal with him.
Yes, if we cut a deal with General Musharraf, there is a danger for us to be discredited. But I believe we would only be discredited if we cut a personal deal. If I asked General Musharraf for a personal favor and made a political concession, I feel I would be discredited. But
Do you mean by personal concession allowing him to leave the country, or do you mean more something different from that?
Perhaps allowing me back into the country, and that because I'm living in exile and I don't want to live in exile, so I tell General Musharraf, let me come home and I'll accept you as president of Pakistan. Or else if General Musharraf says, nice to me, take a couple of cabinet posts and accept me as president, people might think I've done a deal. But if they can see, the people of Pakistan can see that this is about democracy, about human rights, about their hopes and aspirations, if it's about fair elections, a fresh mandate, legitimacy, that it's about transition, that, you know, first General Musharraf is the president, but we have parliamentary elections, so that the domestic issues that parliament is supposed to look after, poverty, schools, hospitals, get addressed, then I feel people of Pakistan will back us in facilitating a transition from military rule to democracy.
What's in it for the general, though? I mean, he's now president. He's in charge of the military. He's, in effect, in charge of the parliament and the judiciary, by the way that rules have been changed in the past 6 years. Why would he possibly be interested in this?
First, legitimacy. He lacks legitimacy at the moment.
Inside and outside the country?
Well, certainly he lacks legitimacy both inside and outside. Although the world supports him, he's still a military dictator. He's still the army chief. So he may have the support of the world, but he does not have any legitimacy as such. And secondly, for continuity of policies. After all, General Musharraf says that he's undertaken certain reform initiatives. Now, if these reform initiatives, which include the ban on the Taliban, the ban on militant groups, which include improved relations with India, are to have continuity, they need to be institutionalized. So I believe that it's important for General Musharraf also to think about his place in history. Is he going to be yet another dictator who is ousted by the military or ousted by the people? Or is he going to be somebody who facilitates a transition and is remembered for taking the military out of barracks and transferring power back to the people?
And what do you need to make a return to Pakistan? Do you need an assurance that you won't be thrown in jail? Or are you thinking that maybe the smart thing to do is to just get on a plane and fly to Islamabad?
Well, I waver between the two. I value my freedom. I value my freedom because I believe it enables me to run the Pakistan People's Party, to coordinate the affairs of the Pakistan People's Party, and keep it as a formidable political force within Pakistan. I'm concerned that if I land up in prison, I will not be able to make this contribution. On the other hand, I feel that if negotiations do not lead to a negotiated settlement, then there's always the option of hopping onto a plane and returning to Islamabad.
How long could someone like General Musharraf keep Benazir Bhutto in prison again? Do you think that would be an issue for the country? I mean, your party, even though you were outside the country, won the greatest number of seats in the last election. Now, a lot of people weren't very impressed by the freedom and the fairness of that election, and I'm sure you share some of that. But, I mean, to go back and to challenge him basically on the tarmac of the Islamabad airport, I mean, wouldn't that be the most dramatic move for you at this point?
Yes, it would be a dramatic move for me to make. But as I said, there's more in this than about Benazir Bhutto, about my quest, about my powers, my ambitions. It's really about the contribution I've tried to make to Pakistan's stability, its democratic future, and Pakistan's rise as a moderate state. I have a problem with General Musharraf because he is a military dictator, but I do not want to see my party ally itself with forces that could perhaps help us take Pakistan backwards rather than forwards. So I have to think very carefully that who would benefit if I just returned and there could be an unleashing of popular forces. Would it be just the moderate forces, or could perhaps some of the immoderate forces also make gains? So this is a very careful decision that has to be taken. For example, my party has been opposed to militancy. We've seen the crackdown on groups like Lashkar-e-Tayyaba, but their supporters are still there. If we unleash change and there is anarchy on the streets, who's going to benefit? Who has the supporters within the military and the security apparatus that could take them forward? So I think very carefully about when I should return. And I don't want to rock the boat at a time when Pakistan is a key member of an international alliance fighting the war against terror.
I'm interested in knowing, though, whether or not you think the international alliance that you refer to could do more to encourage General Musharraf to move to some kind of free election before his own schedule, which I think is 2007. You're looking for elections this year. Could the U.S. do more?
Yes, I would like to see the U.S. do more. Some people tell me why General Musharraf's term doesn't run out till 2007, and the U.S. feels comfortable with him. Why should they push him for elections before? And I say that's because we don't know what will happen in 2007. If parliamentary elections are held early, if they're held in 2005, number one, we can see and ensure that they're fair. And if they're not fair, they're not tied to the presidential election. So we have a time gap to redo them. Secondly, I say that we need elections now because of the discontent within Pakistan, where poverty rates have risen to nearly 60%, and people are hungry, they're miserable, they're unemployed. Someone needs to respond to the needs of the people, and a representative parliament could do that, diffusing internal tensions. So I would like to see Washington push for early parliamentary elections open to all parties and all personalities with an accurate vote count.
I mean, they have said as much, but what do they need to do to make that message resonate more with the general?
Well, I think they need to sit down and tell General Musharraf, we've promised you F-16s and we're giving you huge amounts of military and economic assistance. You're our ally, but we need to institutionalize support for democracy in this country. Democracy is part of the Bush doctrine and we're spreading it elsewhere. We talk about democracy in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and we need to show people in the Muslim world that we are for democracy, not only if there's a Saddam Hussein or if there's a Taliban, but we are also for democracy even-handedly across the board, where our own allies are in place.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. My guest this hour, the former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, and a conversation about what's best for that country and what's the best move for this country to make. Is it to continue to work with President General Pervez Musharraf, who is himself a military dictator, although he continues to claim that he's making changes? Most people say that they aren't coming quickly enough. What do you think the government in this country should do? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Benazir Bhutto is here with me in The Connection studio. She was Prime Minister of Pakistan from 1988 to 1990, and again from 1993 to 1996. She hopes once again to be sitting in that office. And I have to ask you about the truncated aspect of both terms that you served. In both cases, the President of Pakistan responding to accusations that you were running a corrupt administration, removed you from office. And in many quarters, as you know, that whiff of corruption remains. People don't know. How was your administration corrupt? If so, how much? How do you get rid of that? How would you go back and make the case, I'm clean now or I was clean? How do you deal with all that?
Well, I think the important thing is a system, a political system like the United States. For example, there were allegations against President Clinton, allegations which he felt were politically motivated, but there were allegations. Well, he didn't leave his office. He wasn't sacked. There was an inquiry, an investigation done. Unfortunately, in Pakistan, that hasn't been happening. Every time there's a prime minister that's elected, the military security apparatus conspires to accuse that prime minister of murder or kidnapping or corruption. And before you know it, the prime minister is thrown out on charges that have never been proven. And after the prime minister is thrown out, those charges again remain unproven. But the whiff remains, and this must stop. And it must stop by us learning from systems like the American system, where you have charges, but you have them investigated. And if they're untrue, they're filed away. Governance is not disrupted. Democracy is not disrupted. The issues that concern public welfare, crime, health, education, they continue getting the attention that they need and deserve.
What are you saying to me? Are you saying that both your administrations were clean, or just that nothing was ever proven, though?
I'm saying both my administrations were clean. There were huge charges made against my cabinet ministers, against myself, against my family. Special courts were set up, special laws were set up, but nothing was proven. Because when somebody does a wrong, they leave a trail behind. They leave documents behind, they leave bank transfers behind, they leave a trail behind. And I'm saying that these charges were made against me, which were wrong, but they were also made against every other prime minister, not just in the last decade, but against every prime minister elected in Pakistan for the last 50 years. And this pattern has to be broken. We cannot have the military repeatedly throw out elected representatives and just tarnish them with the brush of unsubstantiated allegations.
We have joining us on the line from Lahore, Pakistan, Arif Nizami. He is editor of The Nation newspaper. Arif's been listening in for the last couple of moments. Arif, can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you clearly.
Good. Thank you for joining me. I'm interested in your perspective sitting in Pakistan and if you think that the voters there are ready to say, yes, indeed, it is time to bring Benazir Bhutto back, give her another chance to be prime minister, and also to look at changing the constitution so prime ministers aren't forever being yanked out of office. What are your thoughts?
Well, the country certainly wants democracy in the real sense. For the time being, Pakistan does not have democracy. It's only in name. That either it is a democracy or it is not. In Pakistan, with General Musharraf controlling every aspect of the political system, Pakistan does need democracy and a representative government. As far as Ms. Bhutto making it in the elections, that is an open question, because both Ms. Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif, the two main parties which are in the opposition, they are both Benazir and Nawaz Sharif are outside Pakistan. And in this present environment, it is very difficult to gauge the relative popularity of both these parties. However, if free and fair elections are held, these parties will do between them. They should be able to form a government.
And so you're saying that it's hard to even have this conversation until these politicians or leaders of the parties stand in front of the crowds in Rawalpindi or Lahore or Karachi?
Yes, because basically in Pakistan, the politics are very personalized. Both these parties revolve around these personalities. Mr. Zardari is back, but I don't think so he's making that kind of impact which Ms. Benazir Bhutto does. But even if they are abroad and under the present dispensation, they're not allowed to contest elections. Their parties fight elections, and the elections are fair and free. They should, theoretically speaking, do better than at the present juncture. Secondly, of course, the Pakistani constitution is now already a grammatical kind of a document. It's parliamentary only in name, and in essence, it's not even presidential, because the president is not directed.
Arif, I'm going to interrupt you here. Just one quick question from Ms. Bhutto for you.
Mr. Nizami, it's very nice to be able to talk to you over the airwaves. And I agree with you that at the moment, all powers are really concentrated in the presidency. And the people of our country really need a transfer to democratic norms. However, I wanted to have your views on another issue. And that is that despite the fact that Mr. Nawaz Sharif and I are both out of the country, our parties are very much inside the country. And there are certain issues that we are articulating. There are certain issues that arise. There are, for example, issues relating to relations with India. There are issues that relate to whether the religion should be mixed up with nationality, you know, that some of the conservative has asked that all our passports should say what our religion is, whereas the rest of us have said no, nationality has nothing to do with religion. There are issues of poverty and exploitation, and I feel that our parties are addressing these issues. And one of the reasons that people look towards us is because we talk about issues that affect them directly in their daily lives. And that's why when bar association elections are held or press elections are held, my party is winning those elections. And that's one of the reasons that I feel confident that if there are fair, free and impartial elections, the results that we are seeing in labor elections, bar association elections, press elections will transform themselves into a national mandate.
Certainly, I agree with you that any elections which are free and fair and without the interference from what in Pakistan is called establishment will give different results. In the last elections, the way the major parties which stand for a plural society in Pakistan were blackballed in a way that this graduation clause helped the mullahs and helped them in a big way to capture power. And they were in a way allied to the present dispensation.
And now, also,
in the new dispensation.
Don't you think that the way the journalists were manhandled when my husband went back to Pakistan and the other pressures that newspapers like your own have faced, we've heard about how advertisements were stopped to your newspaper and to other newspapers, that these are very important issues, the freedom of the press, human dignity, whether it be the dignity of the journalist, the parliamentarians, the lawyers or ordinary people, that these are the issues that are causing frustration and discontent in Pakistan and could lead to a backlash, which we need to diffuse through democracy?
But if you were to go back, you'd have to make the case, both in and outside Pakistan, that now, this time, Benazir Bhutto would not be pushed around by the generals and would not kowtow to a group of clerics who say, this is what we want. How would you make that case?
I would make that case by saying that we need to have certain constitutional changes. I would appeal to the other political parties to support us because they too have been victims. That irrespective of whether Mr. Nawaz Sharif's party wins or my party wins or irrespective whether we go in for a coalition or not, let's have basic values that the elected chief executive of the country should have power over certain military decisions and that these powers should not be given to the president because if they're given to the president, well, then it's very difficult to blame the prime minister. So either
But it's still, as you know, a matter behind the scenes of breaking down what has now been over 50 years of the military insinuating themselves into every ministry, into every institution. And now in recent stories, I'm looking at their involvement in the banking industry, in oil and gas, in textiles, they're basically completely running the country. You can't just go back and say, let's change the constitution and all will be well.
You're right, Mr. Gordon. They are basically running the country. But, you know, we had a public sector dominated society earlier and everything was run by the state. Well, the Pakistan People's Party introduced the policies of decentralization, deregulation and privatization. And we privatized the public sector units. What happened in the in-between period is that the military stepped in. And now we need the military to withdraw from the economic sector of the country so our economy can be more competitive. If our economy is more competitive, the families of our army people will
benefit. I couldn't agree more, but how do you do it?
Well, we do that by making the changes. We do that by saying, well, gentlemen, it's wrong to replace the state public sector with the military public sector. The military is part of the state and as a part of this process, you have to go back. And I think that as a prime minister, I would like to stand up and say we need reform in the military, we need reform in our economy. And if I'm going to be pushed about, well, then I'm going to resign. But I'm not going to stand there and acquiesce to policies that are wrong. It's time for us to draw lines in the sand. I think the time has come for Mr. Nawaz Sharif and myself to say we've been in power twice, we've had an opportunity twice, and just pleasing different lobbying groups is not going to stop us from being kicked out. We can get kicked out even if we pander to vested interests. So rather than pandering to those interests, let's draw a line in the sand. And it's better to run the country according to the mandate that the people have given us or to say, all right, if people are going to block my path, I'd rather take the high moral ground and resign, but not kowtow.
1-800-423-8255. Former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, is here in the Connection studio. We're going to take a call from Quincy, Massachusetts. Quincy, rather, Harold's there. Hi, Harold.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm well. What are you thinking?
Well, you have a very elegant, wonderful woman politician, guest scholar. I've heard her speak many times. I think she's a very brave woman. The history of politics in Pakistan has been rife with assassinations, as she knows from her own family. And even the general was assassinated afterwards. But my question is this. If you have the opening of democracy for voting, what about the mullahs, the madrasas, and the Taliban? How much power would they exert on their young voters to possibly bring Sharia into play? And then with a nuclear power in the hands of Sharia, isn't that a big problem?
Well, Quincy, you hit the nail on the head. There is a big problem in Pakistan because we have seen the rise of the religious parties, and Pakistan is no ordinary country. It's a country that has detonated 6 nuclear devices. It's a country whose main scientist has admitted to running an international black market. It's Pakistan poses enormous challenges, not only domestically, but for the world community at large. The rise of the mullahs and the madrasas and how one deals with them is a pivotal question. My concern is that under General Musharraf's military rule, the mullahs are rising and rising in power. power. I believe that the way that we can put them in their place and the way we can take power back to ordinary Pakistanis who share family values with people in the United States, who are concerned about their standard of living, who are concerned about their neighborhood and their communities, is by having elections. Because if we don't have elections, the religious parties will continue to gain in power. But it's no use having elections that are rigged. If we're going to have elections, we need to have elections that are fair, free, and impartial, with a transparent and accurate vote count. My concern is that the moderate parties are being marginalized. For example, the religious parties held 1 million man marches, and they were permitted to hold those 1 million man marches. But when my party called for a reception for my husband when he went back to Pakistan in April, well, the state apparatus broke it up. I'm asking General Musharraf to take action against those officials who disrupted our constitutional right to hold a public gathering while allowing the religious parties to do so, because General Musharraf says he believes in enlightened moderation. I want General Musharraf to pursue that policy of enlightened moderation by taking on those forces that undermine moderate political parties and help religious parties.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. I want to, though, on that very point, go back to your last term, because it was in 1996 when the Taliban seized control in Afghanistan. Your government, with you as prime minister, one of the two or three in the world to recognize the Taliban. And I'm wondering if you look back at that time as and that decision as a significant error and something that, that wouldn't happen under a third term of Benazir Bhutto.
Yes, most certainly. I think of the rise of the Taliban at that time as a significant error. We were in those days in consultation with our other colleagues in the United States and England and in Europe. And I think that we made a mistake. We believed that the Taliban were actually going to bring peace to war-torn Afghanistan and open up avenues for us to do trade with Central Asia. And that was a critical mistake. But nonetheless, at that time, when I was Prime Minister of Pakistan, there was no Al-Qaeda. It was only after my overthrow that the Taliban were emboldened to invite Al-Qaeda, invite Osama bin Laden, and they were emboldened to allow them to set up recruiting camps and training camps. And as leader of opposition in the Pakistani parliament in 1998, I called upon Islamabad to break relations with the Taliban. I said, you've got to break relations with these people. They're dangerous. They've declared war against America, and they're going to pose a grave danger to our region. I didn't know they were going to pose a grave danger to the whole world. I didn't know they were going to attack the World Trade Centers. But it was very clear that the Taliban with Al-Qaeda had simply crossed the limits of international law and had to be reined in. And I feel if I had been in power at that time, my government would have reined them in, and perhaps we could have avoided the catastrophe that did take place. But certainly, I think we have to learn the lessons of the past and not repeat them again.
I go back to what I said earlier about the military, though, because it seems to me, I may be wrong here, but it seems to me that in the past years, as the military has insinuated itself even further into every level of Pakistani society, that the control of the madrasas has also become even greater than it ever was in the time that, that you were prime minister. And to even get back to the place where you were when you left in 1996 may take one, two, three terms of democracy. I'm wondering if too much has changed. I'm wondering if you can ever get back to that level of democracy that you think Pakistan can reach.
Well, time will show whether we can get back, but I believe we can. I want to make a distinction between the military and the security apparatus. As Prime Minister of Pakistan, I found that the majority of our military were good, they were disciplined, they were hardworking, they carried out their orders, they were professional. I sent our boys abroad on peacekeeping missions under the United Nations. They went to Somalia, they went to Sudan, our policemen went to Haiti, and wherever they went, the international community praised them. And I felt so proud as Prime Minister to hear our armed forces praised in this manner. What I would like to see, though, is reform of the security apparatus of our country. And where I feel General Musharraf can play an important role in the transition period is to help a parliamentary government reform the security apparatus that is today accountable to no one. We need to learn again from systems like in the United States, where you have a national security apparatus. They have their input, but they don't violate the orders.
They've had their problems too in recent years.
They've had their problems too. And the madrasas. I want to say that
You know what? We'll get back to that because it's something that I do want to. I don't want to rush you on. We do have to take a quick break. Just a chance to remind my listeners that our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. The former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, is here with me in the studio, and we're open to your questions about the future of that country, its chances for democracy in the years ahead. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Benazir Bhutto is here with me in the studio. She is currently chair of the Pakistan People's Party, former Prime Minister of Pakistan from 88 to 90 and from 1993 to 1996. So it has been 9 years since you were last in office there. And the point that I was making earlier about the growth of the madrasas in the time that less money's gone to public education, so more money's gone to religious education, I would consider this quite a worrisome thing if I was in your shoes right now.
It is very worrisome to see the madrasas still flush with money. And I had to deal with the madrasas as Prime Minister of Pakistan. You know, it was my government that arrested Ramzi Yousaf, who was the man, the mastermind behind the first attack on the World Trade Center. And when he was arrested, he confessed to trying to kill me. So our investigators wanted to know who's this group of people. And they found that the group of people linked up to certain madrasas within the country, not all, but certain politicized madrasas in the country. And then we found out that they were training a whole lot of people in hate. So we went to them and we said, you're going to shut down this curriculum of hate, and you're going to teach tolerance, and you're going to teach moderation, and you're going to equip people for the 21st century. And if you don't, we're going to shut you down. You're going to disarm. They used to have a lot of arms in those days too. So the first university turned around and told us, you can't shut us down and we're going to continue. Well, we shut them down. That was the University of in Peshawar. And once we shut them down, we found the rest of the madrasas came into line. And we have a huge grassroots party. So we set up these local groups of notables or leading citizens. And those citizens had to keep a watch on all those madrasas and report back to the government and to ensure that they were not teaching hate. So this is my concern, that although the present government is asking them to teach science and mathematics, they're not asking them to stop teaching hate. And if you teach hate against other religions, against Christians and Hindus and Jews, and if you teach hate even against other Muslims like Shias, well, that's going to create deep polarization, and that's going to create a cadre that tomorrow can once again take up arms. So we have a history of being able to deal with the madrasas. And I'm pretty confident that given the grassroots support of the Pakistan People's Party, that we could really work towards madrasa reform. Of course, there are a lot of madrasas that are fine, but there are still a whole lot of them that are trying to bring about a clash of civilizations.
Let's go to a call from Framingham, Massachusetts, and V.S. is joining us on the line from there. V.S., thank you for calling.
Thank you. Hello, Ms. Bhutto. This is V.S. Joshi, and my question is a bit philosophical than the usual Pakistan discussion. And the question is democracy the right form of government for all the nations in this world? And let me extend this question a bit further. I feel that, yes, democracy is a goal that each and every nation should aspire to. Democracy is an ambition that each and every nation should aspire to. But maybe there are some nations which are ready for it and some nations that are not ready for it. I come from India, and in India also I feel there are 2-3 states which are not ready for democracy as such. And that is the question. You know, if I want to be a boxer, and my goal or my ambition should be I should go in the boxing ring and knock out Mike Tyson and Lennox Lewis and all those boxers, but that doesn't mean that in my first year of training itself I can go in the boxing ring in front of those guys. I will not even be a boxer. I will not even be able to walk in that case. And that is my question.
All right, but we are, what, 53, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 58 years into independence for Pakistan.
Yes, but the literacy rate in Pakistan is about 50%. As Ms. Benazir Bhutto earlier said, the poverty rate is less than...
But are you saying, though, V.S., I want to go to Ms. Bhutto on this, but very briefly, are you saying that maybe Pakistan's better off with a military general leading the country?
I would personally say that a benevolent dictator in some cases is maybe the right form of government. And again, let me
know. Well, you know, I want to stop you there because I do want to make sure that Ms. Bhutto has a chance to respond to this.
Well, Mr. Joshi, I know what you mean because I hear a lot of people say that countries with huge poverty rates and low literacy rates need a benevolent dictatorship. But I've lived in a country that's had four military dictators, and I can tell you that we have never found our dictators to be benevolent. More importantly, I believe that there is a correlation between terrorism and political systems. I see that countries with long periods of authoritarian rule, countries like Indonesia, like the Philippines, like Pakistan, have some of the worst incidents of terrorism. And I believe that's when rulers rule by force, when authority flows from the power of the gun, it creates a culture of lawlessness. It creates a whole society that learns the lesson that power comes through the use of force, that to affect change, you have to adopt violent means. And I don't think the world community can afford violence or terrorism of this kind. And I believe it's diversity that democracy provides. It's the modernity that democracy provides, accountability and representative government that can actually undermine the forces of violence and of terrorism. And so, Mr. Joshi, while I appreciate the concerns that you have, I strongly believe that democracy is the right route to follow. I look around and I see India with a parliamentary system. I see Bangladesh. I see all our neighbors, Sri Lanka. We are cut from the same social fabric in Pakistan. And so, Mr. Joshi, please support our struggle for democracy.
Let's, if we can, connect another line to Pakistan. Talat Masood is joining us on the line from the capital, Islamabad. Talat is a former general and now working as a political analyst. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Talat, I'm interested in knowing from your perspective, living in the capital today, how easy it would be to return to the kind of genuine representative democracy that Ms. Bhutto is describing after 6 years of military rule. I ask you because I assume that you know from your two roles as a former general and a current political analyst just exactly how big a step that might be.
It would be a very major step, and it would require the cooperation of both the military and the civil leadership to also understand the problems which are inherent in returning to democracy. I fully share with what Benazir Bhutto just said about the values of democracy, but let me start first by saying, addressing them first and then coming to the military. I think all the political parties, including the PPP, which of course is one of the foremost parties in the country and has roots, it is not internally democratized the way that we would like it to be. And it hasn't been able to develop the institutions. And it's very important that the political parties in Pakistan build a capacity to address the issues. They do, of course, talk about the issues, but in order to be able to address the issues, they need to develop far greater capacities than what they have.
Let me, if I can, just for half a second here, Mr. Masood, interrupt you and ask you if you could give me one specific example of the kind of changes that an American audience would understand that you think needs to change to make the Pakistan People's Party a better agency or a better party within a democratic system. What's missing?
Like, for instance, I would say that they should have democratic elections within the party. And I think it should be applicable to all parties, not only the PPP, just because it will help so much. And I'm sure most of them will probably get elected, but people would like to see much greater transparency in their actions. And also, we would like to see them address the real issues which are facing Pakistan and not be personality-oriented, but be issue-oriented. And they should not believe in the politics of status quo, but they should believe in the politics of change. And, you know, they talk about...
You've given us a lot to work with here, Talat. I wonder if I can... I want to take one aspect of what you've said and ask Ms. Bhutto about it, because it's something that fascinates me as well, and that is the politics of personality versus the politics of, you know, choosing a leader from within the party. And it's not unique to Pakistan. We see it in the Nehru-Gandhi dynasty in India. We see it with the ruling family in Sri Lanka. We even see it in Bangladesh. But is it something that works against democracy to have people in Pakistan so focused on the Bhutto family instead of focused on the party?
This is a very interesting question. And, you know, General Talat Masood is one of the generals who's very intellectual in his approach. And he's hit the nail right on the head when he talks about personalities. And a lot of people look at the personalities. But the way I see it is that people in our country, they associate certain policies with certain personalities.
Give me an example.
So, for example, when they look at the Bhutto family, they look at high employment rates. When they look at the Bhutto family, it's a symbol for increasing expenditure on education and building more schools. So the communities feel a sense of belonging with this particular name.
But at the same time, it's also an alienating character, because for all the people who are not a member of the Pakistan People's Party, then you're the bad person. You're not the fresh young face. Hey, we've seen her before. We didn't like her the last time person.
You're right there. It has both its good points and its bad points. But, you know, some of us look at the United States and we see the Bush family and we see the Clinton family and we see the Gore family. And we feel that there's a certain degree of families that do tend to dominate the political scene. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's not a good thing. But there are people who do support the Bhutto family because they associate it with education, with health, with values that they can sympathize with. I mean, community affairs, an investment in the community, treating the nation as a family, bringing people together rather than pitting them against each other. So it does have its positives, but I agree with you, it has its negatives, and we've got to go beyond that.
Let me, if I can, just go quickly back to Talat Masood in Islamabad. Talat, I cut you off before you wanted to make the one point you were going to make about the military, and that's important. I do want to know how anybody gets around the strength or the power of the military in Pakistan today.
Well, I think it's very important. Firstly, I think the military leadership itself has to understand, President Musharraf has to understand. I think he knows the value of democracy. He keeps on talking about it. But in fact, I don't think he really is interested in developing democracy the way it should be. And that's why I think today, both the military as well as the civil leadership are a part of the problem, and they need to be a part of the solution. You cannot also fight terrorism without the involvement of the political parties. President Musharraf's policies, by and large, I think are good, and you cannot find fault with them. But at the same time, not many people own it, because there is such a big political vacuum in the country. And the political vacuum is because of the mainstream political parties are not there. And I think it's very important that they come back, and the parliament is given the power that it deserves. And I think the armed forces have to accept that they are to be ruled and that they are not the rulers. Eventually, we have to move towards that. And even if there is a transition period, there has to be an understanding as to how you will manage this transition so as to really go back to democracy. And you have to strengthen the institutions of judiciary, the institution of the parliament, the parliamentary committees, the election commission. And you should not manage elections, whether prior, during, and after elections. So there are many aspects, I think, which are extremely important. And I would say that former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, Nawaz Sharif, and President Musharraf have a great responsibility today. And if they do not address these issues, I'm telling you that it's the religious extremist parties which will really get all the space, and they will create serious problems for the country. So it's not just a matter of individuals now. It's a much higher stakes which are there.
All right, Talat Masood, I want to thank you for being with us on the program. Talat Masood joining us there on the line from Islamabad. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. I don't think you're going to disagree with power to the parliament, renewed independence for the judiciary and the press, the things that he's talking about, but he says it's a big, big job.
It's a big job, but I'm very heartened by the comments of General Talat Masood. I emphasize General Talat Masood. Talat Masood is a general, and there are many other generals, there are many other military men who love their country, who are prepared to give their lives for Pakistan. And they appreciate that the domination of the military to the exclusion of the political class is undermining the stability, the unity, and the territorial integrity of Pakistan. And that's why I derive great faith in meeting the challenges ahead. I believe the people of Pakistan, as well as a segment within the military itself, appreciates that a democratic Pakistan is the best guarantee of the country's stability and its unity.
To Andover, Massachusetts, for a call from Abrar. Abrar, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you very much, Dick, for taking my call. And welcome, Benazir Bhutto.
I have met you several times. It's wonderful to talk to you. I really, some of my questions was taken away by General Massoud, you know, and he hit the nail on the head, you know, especially regarding the election in the, even in the People's Party. It is really sad to see a beautiful country like Pakistan being ruined by the military dictators and the feudal elites. Now, all this problem with the Taliban, military and the politicians, especially...
Abrar, can I get you to bring this to a question for me, please?
Yeah, the question is, you know, when this, in the new... if Benazir Bhutto get elected, what can she bring to the plate for the Pakistani, 145 million poor Pakistani, because when she was prime minister before, nothing was done for children, education, and women. And we're still at the same place, you know, where we were, you know, 40 years ago.
Well, Mr. Abrar, I thank you for that, because it gives me an opportunity to tell you that when the Pakistan People's Party was in power, we increased education expenditure, and we did it because we attracted investment in our country. The investment gave us huge amounts of revenues in greater employment, greater revenues, and we invested those revenues in women's issues. We set up a women's bank. We set up women's police stations. We tried to help the women of Pakistan. And that's why I believe that democracy is not about bringing me or anybody else to power by parachute. Democracy is a homegrown movement. Democracy is going back to the ordinary people of Pakistan, people like yourself, Mr. Abrar, who are concerned about the future direction of our country. I, as your sister, I, as your political activist, I look towards you, Mr. Abrar, and to people like you to support my party, to support me, to strengthen our pursuit of an agenda that would promote gender rights, minority rights, and spend more on education and health than on wasteful, non-developmental expenditure that ultimately ends up in a war with India.
I'm wondering if you think that you can take this country, Pakistan, and create the kind of economic turnaround, which really is at the basis of all this. When we talk about the difference between India and Pakistan, in many ways we talk about what the democracy has brought to India in terms of their industry there and their ability to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And when people are critical of what's happened in Pakistan over the past 50 years, it's that the country, for whatever reason, nobody's point, I don't want to point a finger here, but for whatever reason, has never been able to get off its economic feet. How do you change that?
I think it can be done, Mr. Gordon. I remember when I took over in 1988, people in Pakistan had to wait 20 years to get a telephone connection. There were 13 hours of power shutdowns. And I just wondered how a country could help its entrepreneurs, could help its young people build businesses of their own if they didn't even have a telephone line and they didn't have electricity to run their businesses with. And so we concentrated on infrastructure. And because we concentrated on infrastructure and a system based on law, we attracted investment. Pakistan has to be able to attract investment to alleviate poverty. I'm looking to greater economic cooperation with India and the countries of South Asia for all of us in South Asia.
You're not afraid this train's left the station?
No, I'm not afraid. I have great confidence in the people of Pakistan and the people of South Asia. We can turn things around, and we will turn things around, but we need your help to get democracy back on track.
I thank you so much for coming to spend an hour with us. It's been great.
Thank you.
Benazir Bhutto, former Prime Minister of Pakistan. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.